87. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 75 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tide or Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, let's do this. Welcome into the Gary Harris Show for this Monday, October 6, 2025. I'm your host, Gary Harris. I got my main man, Chase Brumfield, manning the controls, taking your phone calls on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. And we'll be with you the next couple of hours talking sports and more. And, of course, we'll break down Alabama's big win over the Vanderbilt Commodores, 30-14, and start looking ahead to another big SEC matchup on the road on Saturday morning in Como, Columbia, Missouri, against the now number 14th ranked Missouri Tigers. Alabama is number 8 this week in the AP poll. So another ranked versus ranked matchup for the Crimson Tide. So we are ready to roll. I'll run down the show lineup for you in just a moment. Say hello to Chase and more. But first, let's tell you that this hour, the Gary Harris Show, being brought to you, as always, by Alabama Credit Union. Member-owned and not-for-profit, it really is just a better way of banking. I encourage you to find out more at alabamacu.com. That's alabamacu.com, Alabama Credit Union. Loans for real life. Some rules and restrictions do apply. See if you're eligible for membership. Then join today and feel good about your money. And put a extra change in your pocket. All right, the lineup today, it's Monday, so the Monday lineup, Rodney Orr from TiderInsider.com and Tider Insider TV at 9:30. For Alabama football and football recruiting. And then also at 10:30, Casey Smith on golf, and a lot to cover there. A busy, busy weekend, of course. Even though the SEC had a light schedule, Alabama Vanderbilt, of course, was the game that we were most interested in. But you had Texas going down to the swamp and losing. So Texas in their SEC opener. That was their first SEC game. They go to 0-1 in the league. They've got two losses overall. Arch Manning continues to struggle. Big win for Billy Napier. Of course, Texas A&M remained unbeaten with a win, a tough win, but they pulled away late. But Mississippi State's got a pretty good football team. But that Texas A&M defense, I have to tell you, they are legit. I mean, there's no other way around it. They are a legit defensive football team, particularly up front. They've got some guys that are grown men on that defensive line, and they make it tough on an offense. I can tell you that right now. So, is this the year that A&M finally breaks through? I don't know. There's so much football still left. But they do have a defense that appears to be somewhat dominant. I mean, they can really, really shut you down. And I was impressed by their defense against Auburn, really impressed with their defense against Mississippi State. Also, you had Georgia bouncing back after losing to Alabama to beat Kentucky 35-14. Again, Georgia's good. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to say otherwise, but they're not the powerhouse that they've been either. You know, that's the case for most of these teams now. Now, Miami rolled over Florida State and Tallahassee. That's a really good-looking football team. But for the most part, I'm not sure there's a dominant team in the SEC. I don't think there's a dominant team necessarily in the country. Every week, you're just trying to find a way to win the game. The other SEC team involved in the game was Oklahoma, as they tuned up for their matchup against Texas with a 44-0 win over Kent State. Now, they do not have the tiered quarterback. Hawkins is running the QB spot for them, but they're still a good team. And defensively, they're really, really good. So that was the SEC schedule. Huge schedule coming up this week. I mean, a really big schedule. With all the bye weeks last week, you can imagine there's a lot of teams, just about everybody in action this week. And as we said, Alabama and Missouri, that's an 11 a.m. kick in Columbia on ABC, Crimson Tide. We'll be looking to start stacking some wins. They've won back-to-back SEC games, an opportunity for another one on Saturday. Also in the SEC this coming weekend, and we'll just do this in the order by which the games are played, going from the early games to the later games. Ole Miss shouldn't have too much of a problem with Washington State, as they have a non-conference game that they are going to be playing. Oklahoma and Texas, as we said, in Dallas. Arkansas is at Tennessee with Bobby Petrino as the interim head coach. Florida is at Texas A&M, two really good defensive teams. So, boy, it seems like Texas A&M has been playing a lot of home games in the since they started their conference schedule three in a row. Georgia is at Auburn, and South Carolina is at LSU. So, really, really, really strong schedule. Also, this morning, we're going to get to Kalen DeBoer's press conference from Saturday following the game. And right now, we're going to go ahead and take some phone calls and get it started off. We've got Corey on hold from Trustful. We'll get to you, Corey, on the other side of the break. We're going to lead it off with Tom, the sheriff, is with us. Good morning, Tom.
Morning. How are you this morning?
Doing well. Doing well. Thank you.
You know, one of the interesting things to me about Alabama and Vandy, and Greg McElroy pointed this out early on in the game when he was doing a little bit of an evaluation against Coach Beck, the coordinator, offensive coordinator for Vandy.
Right.
He was talking about how he disguises the same play that he ran last week, but he'll do something different with motion or a lineup or whatever and run the same play, but he kind of got the defense scratching their head about, you know, what's going on because they hadn't seen that look before. I thought he made a really good point and how intelligent it is to do that. And he went on to say he changes it every week. You know, he doesn't run it from the same formation every time, and he changes it every week. I thought that was interesting when you think about the success that Vandy had last year against us and have had against others this year. But I wanted to say that I thought after they busted that big run on us that there was some changes made on the defense, personnel and scheme-wise, that gave me encouragement for the defense. And I wanted to see if I think you were at the game, and I wanted to see if you what you saw in that department.
100%, Tom. I agree with what you just said. I thought that the first quarter, quite frankly, was rough for Alabama's defense. You know, you take the ball after Vandy won the toss and deferred. You have a really good drive, and you get it down there in Vandy territory, fourth and one. I didn't mind going for it. I don't know if there was something else in that play, but, you know, tied to his first interception of the season, trying to throw the ball, you know, on down the field rather than just what I felt like was the right move to get the first down. Vandy takes over immediately, three or four plays in, they bust an off-tackle run. The run fit was bad. It goes for a touchdown. They moved the ball 113 rushing yards in the first quarter. Pavi also had a long run. We'll get into more with Dago Pavi throughout the morning, of course. But they looked like they were going to gash Alabama again. I mean, they were on their way. You know, I think they had 150 yards of offense or so in the first quarter. So I'm thinking, my gosh, man, they may go for 600 yards of offense. But Alabama did adjust and played better in the second quarter. And then in the second half, I thought it was the best half of defensive football that Alabama has played. Maybe, when you consider a quality opponent, maybe the best half of football that Alabama's played defensively since Womack's been here. I mean, they really shut down everything Vanderbilt wanted. Vanderbilt had the one drive where Stav got the interception, which was huge because it was 20-14 at the time. Better by the Penn State league. But they got the big interception, and from that point on, I mean, they didn't give up anything to Vanderbilt, and they shut down the run completely. So, yeah, I agree with you, Tom. It appeared that Alabama made some adjustments. They were physical. They tackled. And I thought the defensive line, really for the first time this year, I thought, again, when you consider the opponent, I mean, they dominated Monroe, and they played really well against Wisconsin, but those teams aren't SEC caliber. To be able to stuff that line of scrimmage the way they did and pressure Pavia, and, of course, the offense did its part, getting those field goals. Once Vanderbilt got down 9, Tom, they were 2 scores down. You saw Vanderbilt as a different football team. And that's, you know, it's easier said than done. I mean, but if you can get them down a couple scores, they're not the same team. And Alabama flipped the script, too, possession time. I mean, you're right. They learned from last year. And Alabama dominated the possession time. Vanderbilt's defense got tired. At the end of the game, you could see they were worn out. Alabama's defense, meanwhile, was getting to Pavia. They were pressuring him. They were getting in the throwing lane. They were shutting down the run. Absolutely. I was really excited by that defensive performance in the second half. I thought that's the best this defense has looked in a long time.
I agree with everything you said. And I think something I've watched out of this defense for a couple of years is that the position they're in, when somebody decides that they're going to attack them with the running game. You know what I mean? And so many times they're so far out of position. But Saturday, I thought they held their ground and played gap integrity as good as you could and used a lot of IQ, you know, to shut that running game that McElroy is right. That is a complicated running game to defend. Now, it's not
it is.
Case for Vandy to run because they know where they're going to go. But to defend, it's almost up there with a Gus Malzahn with all the motion and everything else.
Yeah, it's a solid running game, and they run, you know, they have options off the run game. You know, it's not just, like you said, a designated, this guy's going to get the football. Pavia can pull it. Even that little, Utah pass they run, the little whippy shuttle pass, they faked it to the running back, the play action to the running back, and then actually threw it to him, too, on the little flip. So, yeah, they're good at what they do. But Alabama hung in there early. The touchdown before the half was huge to get it tied. And then got the lead, moved the ball consistently in the second half, held the ball, got the 3 field goals to get up 2 possessions. And really, at that point, Vanderbilt was pressing. You could tell it. And then that Vanderbilt defense, because Alabama had so much possession time, they were tired there at the end. And so, I was really impressed with how Alabama took the game that – you know, I kept saying they needed to start fast, and they did have a good drive. But when they failed on that 4th down and Vanderbilt got out in front, 7-0 and then 14-7, you're like, oh, my gosh, you know. But once Alabama got it tied and then got the lead and then got the lead up to 2 scores, it changed the game. And the defense really looked outstanding. Now, you got to continue to do it every week because now you go up to Missouri facing a team that's coming off a bye who is also very clever offensively and also has a lot of good schematic things that they do. And the quarterback that transferred in from Penn State is playing great. So it never ends, man. You can't rest on your laurels, but it's a good game for Alabama. Sweet win, and the Tide is back in the top 10. Undefeated in the SEC and has a chance, if they continue to play well, to do something special.
Yeah. You know, one other thing, and I'm going to get off. To me, I'm sensing top to bottom from the board all the way down, no matter who or what, but I'm sensing a kind of a unification of goal and team and effort and all like that. Do you get that same sense?
Well, you know, I sensed it all spring and summer. Remember, Tom, we talked about it. I sensed it all. That's all I talked about all summer was everybody was on the same page. There was continuity. There was symmetry. There was chemistry, and they thought they were going to be good. And then they went to Tallahassee and laid an egg. And it just kind of, it just everybody was just blown away by how did this happen. But now it looks like that was an outlier. And, you know, first game, Ty's first start ever, having to start on the road. You remember me saying I wish they had opened at home against ULM before they went. It was one of those years it would have been nice to have had a home opener to get a game under Ty's belt before going to Tallahassee. But, you know, big picture-wise, maybe that was good. It was a shock to the system, but they came together. They won their two home games. Then they went to Georgia and won a big game, and now they've won a big game over Vanderbilt. So, it appears like everybody's, you know, on the same page. This team's together, and they got a chance to be good. Hey, thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Gary. Goodbye.
All right, 9:21. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Corey, you hold tight. We'll get you on the other side. Rodney Orr coming up at the bottom of the hour. The Gary Harris Show is off and running for this Monday, October 6th. We'll be right back.
Here's what's trending on the Tuscaloosa Thread.
Good Monday morning. Alabama remains under several restrictions due to the deepening drought. A fire danger advisory in effect means atmospheric conditions are favorable for wildfires. 28 of them are currently burning across the state, with 7 here in West Alabama. The largest of the fires in our area, 94 acres in northwest Perry County. Click TuscaloosaThread.com for more West Alabama news, sports, and weather. It's free all throughout the day. Don Hartley, Town Square Media, Tuscaloosa.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet and Three
game. The Tide Post Game Show is powered by Pearl River Resort, DCH Regional Medical Center, Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, and Two Dimes.
You see him on WVUA 23 covering sports and on Tider Insider TV on Tuesday nights. Don't miss a minute of the Gary Harris Show. Weekdays from 9 to 11 on Tide 100.9.
All right, 9:25. Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show here on Tide 100.9 FM at 12:30 AM WTBC. Gary Harris, Chase Brumfield. Real quick, good morning, Chase, to you. How was your weekend? Everything go well?
It's good to hear your voice, Gary. I'm doing pretty, pretty well, Roll Tide. But I'm doing well. I'm happy to be back in the station. How are you, sir?
Doing good. Your Bulldogs hung in there. I thought defensively they played really well. Offensively, though, just too many mistakes, turnovers, and they just couldn't sustain any offense, and the defense eventually got worn down. But Mississippi State's a much improved football team, but as we know, it's such a grind in the SEC, and two tough SEC losses to start the schedule. You think that they can rebound?
Yeah, I think they can. It's just the SEC. I was telling Cowboy off the air that it's just the SEC. State can't do anything about it. You just got to go through the gauntlet, survive, and see what you can do by the end of the season.
That's right. That's right. And they get a bye this week, so a chance to kind of lick their wounds. All right, let's jump back out on the Gary Harris Show hotline and welcome in Corey from over in Crustwell. Hey, Corey.
Good morning, Gary. How are you this morning?
Doing well. Thank you.
You know, it never disappoints me that Hewitt can't beat Thompson. I said this to you. I was trying to explain to you Friday that the game plan they had was horrible. And the way the game, from what I understand, worked was they let Thompson dink and dunk down the field and played zone defense. And Trent Seaborn was 33 out of 40, completed nearly 90% of his passes. And I don't understand that game plan. And it really just confusing. And then offensively, Hewitt got the ball the second half, drove down to the 1 yard line, or really the 1 inch line, fourth and goal, and you throw the ball, gets picked off 99 yards for a touchdown. You deserve to lose. Now, if you don't get it, eat it. Thompson starts on the 1 yard line. And like I said, they've been dinking and dunking all field. They may have scored. And here, Thompson made adjustments to our offense, and we didn't really score much the second half anyway. I think we only got a safety, and that was it. But the game plan was just terrible. I mean, I didn't understand why you played your defensive backs off the ball 5 to 12 yards off the ball and let them get 10 to 12 yards of completion. It made zero sense. And then, like I said, on fourth and goal, you throw a pass and you risk it getting picked off, in which it went 99 yards. And it went from 13 to 10 to 20 to 10. And pretty much the game was over at that point. It was just a very confusing and game plan to me.
Well, you mentioned the 1 yard line, and you don't get in. You wind up throwing a pick six. That really was a backbreaker. But I think we saw what you and I talked about. You're right. You had good analysis on the game before, and that was just good analysis that you had. I think that, you know, obviously, you know, Clay Chalkful is different. I mean, they not only play Thompson tough, they find a way to beat them. But these teams in 7A, I think it's just such a almost like a mental block that you know what you're up against, and you just can't play with the same freedom. I mean, Hewitt Trust was a really good team, but they didn't play in that game the way they play in other games. You're right. They were tight. You know, maybe they over-prepared. Maybe they were, you know, it just seemed like when I was trying to track it a little bit myself, it just, you know, you're right. And I don't know if it was the game plan as much as it was just an inability to relax and play. And mistakes get magnified in a game like that. And, you know, and once again, Hewitt came up short against Thompson. So, you know, for all Thompson's flaws outside of 7A Region 3, you know, they lost to Clay Chalkful. They lost to an out-of-state team. But when they play in 7A Region 3, boy, they are hard to handle. Now, Hoover beat them last year. But, you know, they're the favorites to win the region again, and I still think they're the favorites to win the state championship again.
As far as Alabama goes, I really enjoyed the win. Now, the first quarter was a disaster, but they shut down Vanderbilt, and really they should have had two or three more interceptions. But Ty Simpson really played well. The only nitpick I'll have here is we should have just converted the field goals into touchdowns, and the game would have been blown it open even more. But it was good for Connor Talkie to get his confidence up after missing the first field goal.
I agree.
But if we would have converted the field goals and touchdowns, it would have been 42 to 14, which would have made the fans a lot happier as far as a blowout. But you can also build off the field goal. It was a mixed bag, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, but I'm pretty happy with 30-14. I mean, I think that, Vanderbilt came in with a lot of confidence. We're going to get into that more with the bravado and the talking and all of that. But I'm with you on talking. It was good for him to get out there and have to make some pressure kicks. So all in all, I'm pretty pleased with what I saw. Hey, Corey, great call, man. I got to run, but good to hear from you.
Good to talk to you. This Missouri game really worries me. We got to prepare for that running back.
Sure do. He's a beast. All right. We'll take a timeout and come back with Rodney Orr from TiderInsider.com next here on the Gary Harris Show.
Your flagship home of Alabama sports. We are a championship school, and school is in session.
Makes a catch, makes them bang into each other, stays on his feet, breaks a tackle, scores!
Join us.
us Saturday as the Crimson Tide take on Vanderbilt at Bryant-Denny Stadium. Our coverage begins at 11:30 on your home.
Options at up to 95% less than brand names at hims.com/radio. That's hims.com/radio. HIMS.com/RADIO.
Where the season never ends. This is your home of Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. It's time for Rodney Orr from TiderInsider.com, Tider Insider TV, his regular Monday morning recap. Good morning, Rodney.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Well, I want to start out by saying congratulations, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but is this grandchild number 14 for you?
Actually, 15.
15. Okay, I was close. Congratulations on a little grandson that was recently born to your daughter Natalie and her husband. So, tell us his name, and I know you're excited, and the family's excited about that.
Yeah, you know, Asher Barger, and he was born on the 30th, which I guess was what, last Tuesday?
Yeah.
So he's 6 days old. He's home now after a little bit of extra stay there in the hospital at Brookwood in Birmingham. But he's doing great. And I appreciate you mentioning it.
Absolutely. And he's Alabama's undefeated since his arrival.
That's right.
With a clutch victory on Saturday, Rodney, an interesting football game. Because, again, out of nowhere, you know, Vanderbilt's become a serious program. They beat Alabama last year when Alabama was number one in the country. They have gotten off to a 5-0 start, had talked, you know, I don't know that I can remember an opponent. Maybe it's going back to Miami in the 92 season for the national championship game that an opponent talked so much prior to a game. And then in the first quarter, it did not start the way I think Alabama wanted it to. After a really good drive, you have your first turnover of the year. Vanderbilt busting off tackle run with the running back for a touchdown. You tie it up at 7, but they take a 14-7 lead. There was a big forced turnover of Pavia inside the red zone, inside the 10-yard line, and then Alabama was able to tie it up before half. But I fired Wamuth, what, about 3 times in the first quarter in the press box when they couldn't stop that run. They got gassed for 113 yards. But I said earlier on the show, Rodney, settled down a little bit defensively in the second quarter. And then in the second half, I thought it was the best half of defense maybe that Alabama's played when you consider that it was a quality opponent since Wamuth's been here. I mean, the defensive line was getting off blocks. They were stuck in the run. They pressured Pavia. Of course, the offense helped by wearing down, you know, Vanderbilt and holding on to the ball. But the defense, I thought, took a major step in this game, and hopefully it's something they can build on.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Vanderbilt got off to a great start, which was a, you know, a concern. I mean, you wanted to get off to a good start. I thought one of the keys was for Alabama to play from ahead, and because, you know, you don't want to be trailing Pavia. He's a really good player in spite of some of the things, you know, he does. I thought a real key was how Alabama flipped the table with time of possession this year. That was a real interesting approach, I think, that they took. Grubb continued to be diligent in the run game. I thought that was a real key. Saw some positive things there, real positive. I mean, look, and again, I understand statistics can be misleading or hard to kind of analyze at times, but, you know, Vanderbilt came in at, allowing just like 79 yards a game rushing, I think it was, or low 80s. Alabama ran for 146 yards. Jam Miller had 136. Great game by Jam, 22 carries. And I think that's a real key, because I think is moving forward, just having that balance and the ability to run the football. I think the offensive line obviously opened some real gaping holes on the interior, did a nice job there. So I thought the run game was really key. Time of possession. Last year, Vandy had it 42-plus minutes, Alabama 17-something. And this year, Alabama has it nearly 38 minutes, and Vanderbilt has it, you know, just barely 22 or whatever. So it was a real change there. And, you know, I look, you talk about Womack, you talk about the defense. They definitely got gashed early in the game in the first quarter. But I was really impressed by the way they bounced back. You know, I thought you have to give credit where credit's due. And they really were in position to make plays, and they made plays. And you know, you have to give credit to the defensive front. They performed better, I thought. They're getting better. Johannes Pierre, I thought he showed up with his athleticism and disrupted some plays. And Justin Jefferson had 14 tackles, and, you know, he had the key strip that really kind of started getting the momentum going in Alabama's favor. So, overall, you know, just a team effort. Tied through for 340 yards. It probably wasn't the best overall performance in terms of, you know, for him. There was some moments where he took sacks and so forth and so on. But, again, learning experiences. He kept battling. He delivered throws when he had to. And I just thought it was an impressive overall team effort.
It really was. And you summed it up well. But a lot of, you know, within the game, redemption. You know, Ty threw his first interception on a really curious call on 4th and 1 to throw it downfield like that. Talty misses a field goal. The defense gets gashed. But in the second half, you know, everybody bounced back. Talty hit 3 big field goals. And you said something about Vanderbilt. They're a good team. And, of course, you know, it's easier said than done. You've got to get them behind by 2 scores. But I did feel like when Talty hit that 3rd field goal of the second half and Alabama went up 9, it's a 2-score game at that point. And you could just sense it was different for Vanderbilt. Having to play from behind, knowing they had to score twice, Pavia pressed, the defensive line pressured. And he just wasn't effective. And I think that's probably a blueprint. You mentioned the offensive game plan. Brilliant. To control, possess the ball, and wear out that Vanderbilt defense. That Vanderbilt defense was dead tired at the end of the game. So the second half, and I guess, you know, I use the word dominant. Maybe it wasn't dominant, but it was pretty impressive for Alabama in all 3 phases, Roddy. Offense, defense, and the kicking game. To control that game and wind up winning that game. I know the late touchdown, it counts though. To outscore them 16-0 in the second half. I'm impressed by that second half. I thought it was the best half of football, as I said, defensively. I've seen maybe them play in a long time. And then the offense was so efficient, didn't turn it over, controlled the clock. Just really a lot to build off of.
Yeah. You know, and again, That's correct. And, you know, Vanderbilt scores right before the half. That could have been a big momentum swing there. But Alabama takes the ball with, what, 128 or whatever it was left in half. They drive it down the field, 6 plays, 78 yards in 1:11. And they get the touchdown to tie the game. That was really big because Vanderbilt, you know, again, the first quarter, they rushed for 113 yards. I think they netted 22 yards the rest of the game rushing. So what a fantastic adjustment that Alabama made, you know, to slow that down. And again, they did a fantastic job. We mentioned that on Pavia in the second half. And I kind of sensed he got a little frustrated, actually, which we haven't seen that from Pavia. But he was, I think he finished 4 of his last 14 passing with an interception mixed in there. Alabama did a really, really nice job defensively. You can't, like I said, they did a great job against Georgia defensively in the second half, where they only allowed 7 points, came up with a couple of really big stops in the fourth quarter. So it looks like the adjustments are being made there. And again, I just the team effort. It was a very, very solid win. You know, and I think it's another step in the right direction. You know, since the very first game, the FSU game, it's been a step every single week, and they've met the challenge. And now where they are at 4-1, you got to look at Alabama and say, okay, yeah, they have a gauntlet in front of them. They got Missouri, they got Tennessee, they've got South Carolina before an off week. So they've got some real challenges. They just have to focus each and every week on the next step. And it seems to me that Kalen DeBoer has reached this team. And what I mean by that is they seem to be dialed in. I mean, they seem to be really focused on, okay, we're not going to get real high, not going to get real low. We're going to stay focused and dialed in on exactly what that next step is. And now it's Missouri.
What did you think of the offensive line in the game? They continue to rotate guys in and out. Jaden Roberts did not play any snaps in this game, but they still played some different guys up front. And it seemed like, as I said, as the game went on, they really started leaning on that really solid Vanderbilt defensive line and wore them down. How would you grade the offensive line play?
Yeah, I thought it was great in terms of the run game. I mean, I thought they did some really – I say great. I'm talking about, you know, they're obviously taking that next step in the run game. And DeBoer mentioned post-game that he could kind of see that developing against Georgia, which you could. We talked last week about, you know, sometimes we get lost in all these big runs, gashing runs, whatever. But those two, those three, those 4-5-yard runs that they started consistently getting against Georgia – I think now we're starting to see, you know, kind of the confidence that they have, that they're getting better up front, you know, with the run game. And, you know, I thought Jam hit it better a couple times. He did miss a couple of gaping holes. Riley missed a big hole where if he'd have cut back, he might still be running. So, but DeBoer mentioned, hey, there's still some things that we can improve on up front and, you know, with our backs. But you saw a big jump. So I thought the offensive line overall in that way perform really well. You know, it looked like to me, you know, Gary, that Vanderbilt got a little more pressure on Ty. He had to scramble out, but he just made some impressive throws. You know, that throw where he got forced out and he was about to step out of bounds and just made a tremendous improvisational throw to Horton for a big first down. That was key. So, yeah, they got a little more pressure, but I thought Ty responded really well to it for the most part.
You mentioned Missouri, and that's the next challenge, and they're coming off a bye, and that's another clever offensive team schematically. Drinkwitz does a lot. The running back might be the best in the league. The quarterback transferred in from Penn State's playing really well. They've got a lot of confidence too. So yeah, this is another challenge. It's a road challenge, an early kick. How do you see this matchup, Rod?
Yeah, you know, Drinkwitz has done a really good job. You know, he's, you know, but their run game. You're right. I mean, they average 292 yards a game. Now, look, I know their competition. They beat Central Arkansas. Kansas is, you know, a pretty solid team, I guess. But certainly, I wouldn't put them, you know, a top notch SEC type competition, but. They beat Kansas. They did beat South Carolina on the there at home. But Sellers, I think, was a little banged up in that game. So, you know, their schedule is about 109 in the country. So they've been really productive against that schedule. 547 yards of offense. They averaged 292 rushing. You mentioned the quarterback, Pribula. He's really athletic. I mean, he can move around, but he's thrown the ball well. He's got like 1,200 yards passing, 9 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, I think it is. He's completing about 75% of his passes. Hardy is a tremendous addition they have at running back. I mean, he's a guy that's got the size you like, 5'10", 210. He's averaging 70-plus yards a carry, Gary. He's already carried 103 times this year. Got over 700 yards rushing. You know, so he's a load. And Jamal Roberts, the guy I think that kind of spells him, is a guy that's averaging even more yards per carry, 7.3. Of course, he doesn't have nearly the number of carries. He has under 50 carries. So, but again, it's a pretty good 1-2 punch. I know they're going to be aggressive defensively. Gary, they only give up like 62 yards a game rushing. Just again, I understand the schedule. They only give up like 141 passing. It's barely over 200 yards a game that they give up. They're averaging like 45 points a game, I think it is, and only giving up like 15 or something. So their numbers on paper look really, really good. You know, I think we'll find out a lot more about them on Saturday morning. And you know what? It's going to be a real challenge for Alabama coming off these two back-to-back games, emotional, a big win, going up there in the morning, you know, 11 a.m. kick. It's going to be a real challenge on the road against a really fired-up Missouri team that was off this last week, I think. So
yeah, they were on bye.
Yeah, it's going to be a real challenge. But guess what? Like I said, I get the sense that DeBoer has got this team's attention and that they're really dialed in and focused on what's at hand.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because that's where I want to go. Tom called earlier this morning, said the same thing, said everybody seems to be on the same page. And I said, well, that's what I said all spring and summer, that this team was in alignment and there was chemistry and symmetry and they thought they were going to be good. And then they went to Florida State and laid an egg. And it just kind of, I think it just was a shock to the system, Rodney. But that was a first game. It was Ty's first ever start, having to start in a hostile environment. Would have been better probably to have played Monroe first at home. But so maybe that was an outlier. You know, they got this team's attention. I'm not saying it was good. I don't ever think it's good to lose. But we're seeing now what we thought we were going to see, you know, to start the season. And that Florida State game, you can't undo it. But I think this is the team that we thought we were going to see all summer long. Right, Rod?
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly the team that I kept hearing they felt like they had. And here's the thing I think, too. Just the sense I get, they've got so much potential, room for growth. I think, again, I've been a little, frankly, harsh on the defense. You know, but I you got to give them kudos. I mean, front to back, you know, whether it's on the defensive line or wherever it is, linebackers, we saw Justin Hill step up. Some of these young defensive linemen are really starting to show up. London Simmons, Edric Hill, you know, these are guys that are starting to supply some of that. Although Edric Hill started, James Smith was out. But still, you're starting to see them play better up front. In the secondary, we saw a lot of guys contribute, make plays. So I feel really good about the potential, some of the things we've seen from the defense and the adjustments that they make. And then, I still think, you know, this is a growing offense. I mean, it's got a lot of potential. So I think there's reason for, excitement right now because, look, they're in the middle of a gauntlet. Again, we've mentioned that Missouri, then Tennessee, got South Carolina. But at one point, you know, it was like, okay, how are you going to make it through this unscathed? And now I look at it and say, you know, it's going to be tough. There's no doubt. But I think this team has the potential to get to that bye week and possibly unscathed. And, you know, I think, again, it's going to be a challenge. But if they continue to keep taking these next steps, then, I think they've got some real potential here.
And in our last little bit, Rod, recruiting-wise, great few days for Alabama, picking up commits and then also having these guys. I guess now the process is you commit, but then you have to still shut it down. But Alabama had the wide receiver Morgan, the running back Crowell, Kamala, the quarterback, all shut down the recruitment. They picked up some commits, so rolling off the field as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's this process of, you know, it's a commitment. And then now we have reports they're shutting down their recruitment anyway. It's, you know, again, they've done a fantastic job. And now they had Jared Doughty, the big offensive tackle from over in Atlanta, 6'5", 300, whatever. He's a little over 300, I think. But he's got a great frame. He's a fast riser. I mean, he's a three-star, but I would think that his stock, his star power anyway, could go up. Ohio State, Georgia, a lot of teams jumped in on him here recently. For Alabama to pick him up, I think it's a great pickup to go with Bear Fretwell and, you know, the other guys that they have committed on the offensive line, Chris Booker, Sam Utu. It's going to be a pretty solid offensive line group right now. So that was a big pickup. Of course, they picked up a couple of 27 guys. Last week, they picked up Jatori Williams, a really good-looking interior offensive lineman from down in Phenix City. Again, Georgia, Ohio State, a lot of teams. And then Nash Johnson, the cornerback that they picked up also. I thought that was a big pickup. So 2027 is a long way away. You know, you got to hold on to those guys, but that's a good start.
Great stuff, Rod. Terrific update. Find out more at TiderInsider.com and tomorrow night on Tider Insider TV at 6:30. Have a good Monday, Rod.
Okay, buddy, you too. Take care.
All right, we'll be back to wrap up hour number one of the Gary Harris Show right after this.
Of the game, we're going to feature Coach Tommy Tuberville. We'll talk to Drew DeArmond. We'll also talk with Martin Houston. We'll do the good, the bad, and the ugly as we recap Alabama and Vanderbilt every Monday, sponsored by DanielMoreArt.com, starting at 2 p.m. on the game with Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest running sports.
Contact Courtney White at 205-242-5127, North River Timber, co@gmail.com, North River Timber Company.
Since 2011, Billy Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big screen, high-definition televisions, both dining rooms, at the bar, and outside on the beautiful patio. Come by and say hello to Kim and Lisa, the Billy's management dream team. Billy's, good food, good friends, and good time.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky partially sunny today. The chance of a few isolated showers this afternoon or this evening. The high today, 84. Tonight's low, 69. Tomorrow, a mixture of clouds and sunshine with a chance of scattered showers. The high, 87. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 75 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You're listening to The Gary Harris Show.
Goal line in, touchdown, Alabama.
On your home for Alabama sports.
Tide 100.9.
And streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. A little bit behind, but that's okay. Wrapping up the first hour has been brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. Hour number two is on the way. We'll have Casey Smith on golf. We'll also hear from Kalen DeBoer's Saturday post-game press conference, plus more of your phone calls. Another hour of the Gary Harris Show on the way on Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTBC, your home for Alabama sports.
TBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
From the Fox Sports studios in Los Angeles, here's
Here's Chris Perfett.
Baseball postseason on Sunday night. Jorge Polanco hit two home runs to give the Mariners their first win in the ALDS over the Tigers. 3-2. That series is now tied 1-1 heading to Detroit. The Blue Jays thrashed the Yankees 13-7. That series going back to New York, but the Bronx Bombers are now on the verge of elimination. National League in play on Monday. Sunday Night Baseball, Drake May led the Patriots to an upset of the Buffalo Bills, leading a drive down the field to set up a game-winning field goal with 15 seconds remaining. Patriots win at 23-20. Running back for the Chargers, Amarian Hampton, suffered an ankle injury on Sunday. He was spotted in a walking boot after the game. He'll get tests and could miss some time.
Treatment options at up to 95% less than brand names at hims.com/radio. That's hims.com/radio. hims.com/radio.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tider Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Here we go. Hour number two of the Gary Harris Show. For this Monday, October 6th, 2025, and we are stacked up on the phone line. So we're going to get the phone calls right off the bat here in hour number two. We're going to have, Pat, then Tommy, then Cowboy, then Robbie. So we'll start off with Pat to lead us off here, and we'll take phone calls for a while. Hey, good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Gary. I heard y'all talking earlier about Ty holding on to the ball too long. Let's talk about what Ty did special first. At the end of the first half, that was reminiscent of Kenny Stabler when he had Biletnikoff and when he had his great receivers, Branch and the different ones that back in the early 70s or late toward the mid 70s that were so, so special. But to have a minute and 33 or a minute and 36, whatever it was, to go down, take them 75 yards down to score that touchdown, that was probably the biggest difference in the game. It made Vanderbilt think about quitting. It really did. What do you think?
Well, I thought it was a special drive. I absolutely needed at the time to even that thing up by halftime was huge. I thought he played great in the game, and I don't know that Vanderbilt thought about quitting. I think at 14-14 at the half, they still pretty much thought they were going to win the game. But I thought, Ty's doing – he's been masterful. He's, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I thought he played terrific in the game against a good defense and a team that, at times was able to get some pressure. But outside of the mistake on the first drive, when I don't know if that was the play call, if that was the play call, I wasn't a big fan of the play call on 4th and 1 trying to throw the ball down the field. But, yeah, he's playing fabulous football. He's tough.
I watched the film breakdown of him. We did have receivers that were right there together on that particular play call. And that could have been part of it. This guy called the film guy, that was an amazing deal to watch a whole breakdown of that football game and what Alabama did. But like he said, that guy said that, he believes that Vanderbilt's going to win a lot more football games. If they don't let Alabama beat them twice or three times, that Vanderbilt has the ability to beat most teams in the SEC. And, Texas is still going to play Vanderbilt. But I'm excited for Vandy playing Texas. I look forward to that because it wouldn't hurt my feelings to see Texas lose again. They can blow it out there for sure. But I think Alabama's in the right direction on this defense. Hats off. I've been on that defense. I call him a directional school defensive coordinator from South Alabama. But the second half, the defense was special. You got to give credit where credit's due. What do you think?
No doubt about it. I've said the same thing this morning, Pat. That second half of football defensively, when you consider they're playing a good opponent, I thought it was as good a second half of football, a half of football maybe as Alabama's played since Womack's been here. I thought they did everything well. They stuffed the run. They pressured the quarterback. They intercepted the ball. Played great. And so, yeah, I'm very, very optimistic. And you got to do it every week in this league. But I thought that defensively in the second half, they played really well. And I thought, again, I'm not going to say dominant, but they shut Vanderbilt down in every area. So, yeah, very encouraged by what I saw from the defense. Hey, great call as always, Pat. We got to keep it moving because I'm so stacked up with phone calls. Let's get to Tommy over in Romulus. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, Gary. This is a great win because Vanderbilt was a quality team. This is not the granddaddy of your father, Vanderbilt football team. They had confidence, and they believe they were going to win. So, Jim Kane Woman, trade it, take it high. I'm going to shut them out. I mean, Vanderbilt is going to make plays. Your football team is going to make plays. So, Alabama took Vanderbilt most shots, and we won. Let's get Missouri this weekend. Like I said, every game is a playoff game now, and every game is a trap game. So, you got to be ready in the SEC this year. So, I was very happy with the team.
Well said, Tommy. You're right. Every week is a challenge, and that's the way that I look at this. I look at no matter what you did the week before, whether you won or you lost, you got to come back out the next week. It's a gauntlet. This is an incredibly balanced league, and you just got to try to find a way to win the game you're playing that week. And now it's Missouri, and you're right. It's going to be tough. It is going to be tough going to Columbia for an early kick on Saturday. We'll see if Alabama's up to the challenge. Hey, good to hear from you, Tommy. Let's get to the Cowboy. Out there in Big D, Dallas, Texas. Hey, Cowboy.
How are you doing, Gary? I will say that was a good performance Saturday. Offensively, they looked pretty good. When you let the ball out, the air out of it for 8 minutes, you're doing something right. I'll give them
that's right. Mm-hmm.
And but that Vanderbilt team, I think their high water mark would be 9-3 at best. I don't think they're going to beat George McIntyre's 1982 record of 8-4. That's the best Vandy record in a long time. Diego Pavia, if he can't throw on the run and keep him kind of bottled up, he can't beat you. He can't see over the line. He's a pedestrian thrower at best if he can't sprint out and kind of throw on the run or use some, shovel passes. I was just surprised they never threw the shovel pass the second half. They threw it two times and, got a first down and got a touchdown. But I told myself they scored too early when they got to the goal line because we had used two timeouts to control the clock, which was a good move. But I thought they were
right.
Kind of ran some plays, dive into the line, but that was good coaching on Alabama's part. And who's thought of as a better defensive coordinator, Kane Womack or Corey Batune? I think that's his name at Missouri. Because Batune, he worked for him at South Alabama, but I saw a thing up last week. I think it was Roman Harper had it up on one of those SEC shows that he had the Missouri coordinator in his top five of the SEC coordinators, and I didn't see Womack's name on the board, and I was just wondering what your thinking on that was. Because he was at,
I hadn't thought much about it. I'm impressed, like we all were, by Alabama adjusting defensively in that game against Vanderbilt, and in the second half, the defensive line played as well. Of course, they got James Smith back in that second half, too, but I thought they played as well as I've seen them play in a long time. I don't really track coordinators and rate them and anything like that. I think Kane Womack so far this year has done a nice job. I mean, I was frustrated in the first quarter when Vanderbilt just came out, man, and just was like, oh, my gosh, here we go again. But, the second half in the last two halves of football against Georgia and Vanderbilt, they've given up 7 points total. Seven total.
Yeah.
And, they shut out Monroe and they played really well in the Wisconsin game. So since the Florida State game, defensively, statistically, they've been good. I mean, by to hold a team in the SEC to 14 points, and, you know, I picked it 38-21. So I was pretty close. I picked it by 17. They won by 16. But to hold a team to 14 points in the SEC is solid, man. So I think they're playing well, but I'm still not sold that this defense is going to be able to consistently do that, but maybe they'll prove me wrong. Saturday would be a big step because that offense is going to be ready up there Saturday.
Right. Womack's defense reminds me a lot of kind of Joe Kynes and Don Lindsay kind of put together. You remember for the old timers?
I remember them both really well. I mean, you know, I remember them. Don Lindsay under Bill Curry and Joe Kynes, two different stints under Ray Perkins and under Mike Shula. So, I remember both those guys really well.
But, you know, Gary, have we played a quarterback yet that can get the football down the field? I guess Tennessee guy's going to be the first guy that, you know, really, you know, can throw the ball down the field and hit the home run.
Well, I don't know. I think Castellanos is not a big guy, but he can certainly throw the football down the field. He's done that. He's done that. He did it at Boston College. He's done it at Florida State. So I wouldn't say that they haven't.
NFL. I'm talking about a guy the NFL rates as a top-notch quarterback play the NFL game.
Well, I don't, you know, how they're rated, but I know, he can throw the ball down the field. So, well, you know, like I said, every game's going to have a challenge. Every team in this league is going to challenge you. All you can do each week is try to game plan and scheme and then go out and execute a plan that gives you a chance to win. That's what I'm looking for from Alabama. That's what I'd be looking for if I was a Georgia fan or a LSU fan or a Tennessee fan or any fan. In this conference, it's a lot like the NFL now. It's just that week, every game is going to have special challenges based on the opponent, and it's going to be hard to win. So you just hope that your team that you pull for can perform and execute at a high enough level to win the game, whether it's by 1 point or by 30 points. I mean, the days of Nick Saban rolling a team out there that, you know, the game's over, you know, in the second quarter, I don't see that happening anymore. I just think there's too much parity. So the challenge this week is Missouri, and I hope that Alabama has a good plan and that they go up there and they win. You win, you're 3-0 in the league, and, you know, you just keep trying to stack some wins. But it won't be easy, Cowboy. You're right. I mean, Missouri won't be easy. Tennessee won't be easy. South Carolina won't be easy. LSU won't be easy. Oklahoma, Auburn, all these games are going to be hard games, and you could win them or you could lose them based on how you prepare and play that particular Saturday. That's the challenge that you face in this league. And every team faces it. Every team in this league faces it.
Oh, yeah. And next year will even be worse. Hey, Gary, let's change gears a little bit. How about that Vlad Guerrero Grand Slam Jr.?
I don't know that I've ever seen a baseball hit harder in my life. I don't know that I've ever seen a baseball. I'd like to see who got that baseball up there in that second deck and just see if the cover was still on it. He absolutely destroyed that baseball. I mean,
man,
it was like a torpedo coming off that bat. He's talking about the Blue Jays have just rocked the Yankees in the first two games of the ALDS.
I love it.
And yesterday, Vlad Guerrero hit a grand slam that the exit rate on that ball had what maybe a second
in this series.
I know. To answer your question, it was impressive. It was an impressive home run. I mean, he absolutely – to hit it that far, and it wasn't like it was a towering shot. It was still kind of a line drive, and he just absolutely killed that baseball. Yeah, it was impressive, man.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Yeah, well
– all right, buddy. Got to get you some other calls. Thank you.
Yeah, well, Robbie ought to pick up on that. He said he was next. He's a baseball guy.
Oh, he absolutely is. Yeah, well – I tell you what we'll do, though. We'll go ahead and get to our break, and then we'll come back. We got Robbie Glenn and Ellis from Tennessee on the phone lines. Casey Smith coming up at 10:30. And the final segment, we're still going to try to get to that Kalen DeBoer audio. We'll come back with more phone calls when the Gary Harris Show continues. Before we get to the break, though, let me remind you the $99 Sheep Sale continues at T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall. And also, T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery is the sponsor for our Bama football trivia. We gave away a... another, we gave away that autographed football this past Friday. night with O.J. Howard and Vinny Sinceri. And our winner, I can't remember our winner's name. I got it put down, though. But anyway, we'll be giving another great gift away coming up this Friday. It's Jason. Jason Coggins is our winner on Friday. All right, we'll be back with more phone calls right after this.
West Alabama Real-Time News Update from the Tuscaloosa Thread Newsroom.
Here are the TuscaloosaThread.com headlines brought to you by Tuscaloosa Mazda. West Alabama Democrat Congresswoman Terry Sewell in a Facebook post claiming Republicans are using the ongoing government shutdown to take Americans' health care away.
In our district, it's predicted that annual premiums will increase by $2,571 a year.
She says the poor of West Alabama cannot afford that. At least 6 people died in shootings across Alabama this past weekend, including one in Tuscaloosa. 37-year-old Keandre Sterling died at a storage facility just off Greensboro Avenue. In sports, Alabama's win over Vandy Saturday vaulted the Tide up 2 spots to 8th in this week's college football poll. Tuscaloosa Mazda's expanding to serve you better. Come see our new and pre-owned Mazda lineup offering fuel efficiency, advanced technology, and plush comfort. Tuscaloosa Mazda, 3100 Skyline Boulevard East, or online at TuscaloosaMazda.com. Don Hartley, Townsquare Media, Tuscaloosa.
If you haven't already, you've got to try Tuscaloosa's unique breakfast, brunch, and lunch concept. Brick and Spoon, downtown Tuscaloosa, Timberson Square. It's fresh food with a Cajun flair featuring a full bar with build-your-own Bloody Marys and mimosas. Open daily, 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. Available for after
fishing and provide you with the lowest possible price. Come experience the Urban's Working Western Home Team service today. Tell them Van the Boot Man sent you. Roll Tide.
Life doesn't wait for when your finances are in perfect order. It just happens. But no matter what surprises come your way, Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. They offer an easy application process and fast decisions so you can stay focused on feeling good about whatever life brings your way. Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans.
Save up to 50% on your Babbel subscription when you sign up at Babbel.com. That's Babbel.com to save up to 50%. BABBEL.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky partially sunny today. The chance of a few isolated showers this afternoon or this evening. The high today, 84. Tonight's low, 69. Tomorrow, a mixture of clouds and sunshine with a chance of scattered showers. The high, 87. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 79 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Hot! Your home for Alabama Crimson Tide football. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:24. Welcome back to the Gary Harris Show, and we are rolling with phone calls. Let's get right back out on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904 and welcome in Robbie Glenn. Hey, Robbie, good morning.
Hey, Gary, good morning and happy Monday. Sorry, my throat's a little still tired. Long week, but man, what an awesome weekend for the Bama Nation. Started out with Striker Strong on Friday. Just the best weather again. Went great. Had so much help, so many great sponsors. You know, Lane made the trip up from Tuscaloosa to help. She got there like 6 in the morning to stay. I think she left at 1. Just helped tremendously, and a lot of ex-teammates flew into town, a lot of football guys. Just, it went great, and I couldn't ask for a better turnout and support, and so awesome. I thank everyone for that. And then to turn around Saturday and just make it even better with a great game by Bama, you know, couple busted plays there early, running backs getting loose, seems to be our happens every game, but hopefully they get that figured out, because here we go with Missouri, you know, top running back probably in the SEC right now. But it all, you know, I think Jam is what I said would be. I thought he would have a breakout game, and he did. He got over the 100-yard, 136, played solid. But for Ty to hit 8 different receivers, I just love the way we're playing. Now here we are, got to gear up for an early game, Missouri. But I think their quarterback, which is named Probola or something like that, he plays a lot like what they just got at Vandy. He's going to run the ball a lot. He's tough. He's going to hit some people. But I think we'll be geared to what we just saw, and we'll be ready for him. And I'm excited for it. 11 o'clock kick. Just And one thing, do you think for this game, think Caden Proctor is going to line back at punt returner?
Man, I tell you what, that's two games in a row they let him handle the football. And I'm like everybody else. It's exciting, and he's come through. I still hope that doesn't become a regular part of the offense. So I still think teams will adjust. And to have a 360-pound offensive tackle carrying the ball, I still worry about ball security. I can't help it. That's just the way I'm made. But so far, so good. But you know, I'm more excited about how he's playing at left tackle, Robbie, to be honest with you. he's really starting to bulldoze people.
Well, I think it's excited him. I think it's got him so excited to be in the game because he is getting these other opportunities to show his talents and how athletic he is. So I think he's just taking it, and then he's dominating on the line again. So I don't know, I'm liking it. I'm like you. You know, they're gimmicks, but it's funny. It brings you back to the fridge back in the days. But I don't know how anyone would be able to punch that ball out of there. You can't even see it. I mean, he puts them big old arms around it. You don't even know where the ball is. So
that's a good point. No, like I said, so far so good. But I just every now and then I think it's neat, but I don't want to see it become a regular staple. That's just me, though. I'm probably in the minority, man.
Yeah, but it's fun. It's exciting to watch when you see that big old boy back there. I like him as a lead blocker more than I would as getting the ball, but it was still fun, you know.
Yeah, it was. He's 2 for 2. He's gotten the ball twice. He's gotten first downs both times. Hey, I'm so glad that the tournament went well, Robbie. That's awesome, man.
Yeah. Sorry I didn't get to call in. It was just so busy.
No, I understand. It's busy. I'll be back at Innisfree for every game. So swing on by again. Hey, thanks, Robbie.
Yeah, I will try to get out there Friday. All right, Gary. Roll Tide.
All right, let's close out the segment with Ellis up in Tennessee, Manchester, Tennessee. Hey, Ellis.
Roll Tide, Gary Harris.
Roll Tide.
I'm just now getting my voice back. So I was one of the screaming Bama fans when Vanderbilt was on the field.
Well, that's good. That crowd was excellent Saturday, man. They really were. They were really good and stayed for four quarters and impacted the game and affected Vanderbilt. And, you know, just everybody played their part on Saturday. The players, the coaches, the support staff, and the fans. It was a really good win.
Yeah. When it hurts your ears when everybody's screaming all together, that means that they brung it Saturday, us fans did. So, yeah. But I'm like you, we didn't play up to par. It's like we come out playing stale, if that's okay to say that. You know, it's like we played stale. But then we got better, and then the second half, the defense come alive. So I was very pleased with that, if they can just keep that up. But we'll have to see the rest of the ball game. But if we keep playing like we're doing right now, and I think we got a good chance to win a few more ball games. You know,
got a chance to win them all. That's the thing about this team. There's not a team on the schedule they can't beat. Having said that, there's some teams on the schedule that can certainly beat Alabama. That's why it's important that like you said, you bring it every week. You prepare during the week to play the game. Then you go out and you execute during the game, and you give yourself the best chance to win, because it will not be easy against any of these teams in the SEC. Hey, great to hear from you, Ellis. Appreciate you as always, my friend. I'm not sure. It's supposed to be when you lead with a crown of your helmet. That's supposed to be what targeting is, regardless of where you make contact. But it from game to game, play to play, it's all over the place. But that's what targeting is supposed to be, when you target someone with the crown of your helmet, and you don't have to hit them in the head. You can hit them in the chest. But it's leading with that. That's what targeting is by rule.
There's an
official out there that says otherwise. Let
me
know. But that's my understanding.
Good show, Gary Harris.
Thank you, sir. It's 10:31 on the Gary Harris Show. The YMCA of Tuscaloosa is ready for you when you're ready for the Y. Get by and see them, 2300 13th Street downtown, and become a member today. I guarantee you won't regret it. We'll be back with Casey Smith on golf. A lot to cover with Casey next here on Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM. WCBC, your home for Alabama sports.
free gutter inspection today and get up to 30% off. That's leaffilter.com/country for up to 30% off. Leaffilter.com/country. See representative for warranty details.
Covering University of Alabama sports, as well as the national and local scene as well. The Gary Harris Show, only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show, and it's time for Casey Smith on golf, and we got a lot to cover this morning with Casey. Good morning, Casey. How are you?
Hey, Gary, doing great. Survived the weekend in Tuscaloosa. It was a lot of fun, and got a win, so everything's good. Hope you're well.
Yeah, doing well, and Stephen Fisk had a great weekend. We talked about the Sanderson Farms Championship over in Jackson. Great golf course, beautiful golf course. Conditions were unbelievable for scoring. And, you know, as we said, these type of tournaments, no, they don't have the pizzazz of the bigger tournaments on tour, but they're very, very important. And for Stephen Fisk, it was a life-changing golf tournament for him. He gets his first win, and now he's got some status, and a really talented player, obviously, to shoot 24 under and beat Garrett Hingo by 2 shots. Pick it up from there. Tell us about Stephen Fisk. I don't know much about him, what he was able to do over the weekend, and how he changed his life on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, congrats to Stephen Fisk, from Atlanta native from Georgia Southern, played his college golf there, birdied the final 3 holes for a 2-shot victory at the Sanderson Farms Championship at the Country Club of Jackson to claim his first PGA Tour victory and his tour exemption through 2027. He shot a final round 64, it was really lights out. I mean, I watched some of it yesterday late. Shot 33 on the front, came in -5 on the back. He had, you know, I mean, birdieing 16 and 17 really did the trick for him. And to take a, you know, a lead over the runner-up, Garrett Hingo. Fisk is really a, you know, he was one of the worst putters on the PGA Tour going into the weekend. And I was reading where he said he read a book. It was a Bob Rotella Putting Out of Your Mind book. And he said he felt like when he got to chapter 2 and 3, it really changed his game. I mean, he was 160 out of 165 guys in putting entering the weekend. And, you know, he goes 129th in strokes gained in round 1, 36th in round 2, 6th in round 3, and 3rd in round 4. So a total of T13. And he started reading it as the week went on. So, hey, you know, check out that book, Bob Rotella's Putting Out of Your Mind. But a big, big win for him. A friend of mine at Justin Parsons that teaches Harris English and others teaches him. And God's been grinding. I mean, look, he was the he was world player when he was at Georgia Southern and really would have won the Haskins Award the year that he won 6 times his senior year at Georgia Southern and had a finish in the top 10 in every event. Matthew Wolf also won 6 times at Oklahoma State. That was his final year there. And beat him at the NCAAs, or he would have won the Haskins Award that year. So Fisk can really play, and now he's secured his, you know, status for 2 years.
Yeah, he did. And this was an event that had a lot of local connections, a lot of former Bama guys. Gordon Sargent cashed a check. Nick Dunlap, you know, with where he has gotten to, the fact that he was able to make the cut and cash a check was good. Lee Hodges cashed a check. Mullinax cashed the check. Nobody really in contention, but there were, and I know Pat Kizire was in the field. Davis Riley, disappointing on a golf course that he's played a bunch of times to not make the cut, but kind of pick it up there and tell us about the local connections.
Yeah, I mean, Frankie Zappin, former Bama player, transferred out, but still has ties. He finished 6th, so he was the lowest finisher of those that have ties to and who we follow. Davis Thompson, Auburn native, 21st. Trey, like you said, 29th, and played pretty good. Sargent cashing a check's great. Lee Hodges cashing a check. You know, Dunlap, as we talk about him a lot, after I really have to give him some credit. He had not the round one that he wanted. We both were texting, thinking the wheels are falling off again. And so I would think if I'm him, I'm taking a lot of promise and positivity going forward to rebound and shoot a 67 in round 2 and then grind. Obviously, the conditions got a little tougher, I think, as the week went on. And he only had one bogey in round three and a 69. And so, you know, as we've tracked him, then only one bogey in round four. And as we tracked him, you know, closer and closer as his game started slipping and the big miss entered in, you were seeing what happened in round one with that one really bad driver shot that led to a double bogey. And him avoiding all of that going, you know, the rest of the week and hopefully going forward should really give him confidence. I mean, we've been saying all along, it's nothing physical for that kid. If he's well, he's as good as there is. And so hopefully he's getting that confidence going forward and getting that mental block out.
I know the folks in Jackson, and I've said before, I lived in Jackson and worked there. That is a beautiful golf course. I know they were thrilled to have a former major champion in the field, Jason Dubner, PGA champion, former Auburn golfer. Did not make the cut, but he went down to Jackson and play, and that's always great for an event like this to have a major champion play.
Yeah, no doubt. They had a good field, and you know, that's a good event, well attended for that community. A little bit of a funky place on the schedule because now they're going to go to Japan for a week and back, and then they have like a week off, and then they have that 4-week run to finish the year, to finish the fall. So the pressure is pretty high for all these guys right now, and they're playing for a lot because the top 100 players are exempt next year into all the events. So there's a lot of those guys jockeying for that. Obviously, Stephen Fisk helped himself because he was in that same category. And, you know, Trey Mullinax, hopefully he can have a good rest of the fall. He needs it. He needs it bad. And Patton had a win last year, so he's safe. Davis Riley, he's safe already. So that was good for him. But, yeah, they're going to Yokohama, Japan for the Bay Current Classic this week. And I don't know if you saw on the Champions Tour,
don't steal my thunder. Let me set it up, Casey. I want to set this one up. Yeah, really, we talked about grinding and being a grinder, and nobody represents that better than Tommy Two Gloves Gainey, who came up through the television show The Big Break, kind of a self-taught player, and has used that notoriety from The Big Break to kind of, you know, try to have a professional golf career, but it has not been easy for him. So for him to come out on the Champions Tour and win, I know there's a lot of just average fans, people that casually follow the game, and people that are out on tour that are proud for this guy who got it done over the weekend.
Yeah, congrats to Tommy Gainey. He is the first-time winner from a Monday qualifying position. So Monday qualified, even though he had won on the Champions Tour, didn't have enough status to get auto status, and now he'll have full status going forward. Monday qualified into the Furyk and Friends event. And one, yeah, he is 10 cup as it gets. He wears two golf gloves. He plays equipment that's pretty much off the rack. That's, you know, it's as standard in stock as you could build. There's not a lot of custom to his stuff. And always been a grinder, though, and has really low rounds in his bag. So, you know, he shoots 666 yesterday and won by two. And these guys, we're starting to see more of these guys turning 50 get out there. Earlier, he turned 50 in August and licking their chops, because I think we're going to continue to see that as well. I mean, Tiger Woods turns 50 next year, and he's going to continue to drive. I mean, the checks are going to go up. Once he starts playing, the checks are going to go up because there's going to be a lot more television time for him. And I think you'll see the Champions Tour really get a shot in the arm and be very competitive the next few years.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to see him get a win, and you know, I think a lot of people around the country excited about it. All right, you kind of set it up with a fall run, going overseas and so forth. When do you expect the top players to get back out there, most of them, Casey?
Yeah, I mean, well, this week, and sort of goes along with the question is, This past week they played the Dunhill, which is a sort of a wrap up for the European tour in terms of they'll get into some of the desert places next, but they played at the home of golf at St. Andrews. Bob McIntyre won by five. So you had a lot of contingent of American Live players and PGA Tour players, European Tour players, anyone with Euro ties, most of the Ryder Cup team for them was there playing in the Dunhill. Robert McIntyre, home guy, won by five. And then when you flip back to all these combined schedules, Everyone picks up for the last four events at the Bank of Utah on the PGA Tour, October 23rd. And that runs through. Then you have the Worldwide Technology Championship in Cabo. Then you have the Butterfield Bermuda in Bermuda. And then you have the RSM. We'll see some scattered guys, I think, playing in some of this stuff. And then we may not see a lot of the top guys until the Hero World Challenge in December 4th. So they're all, you know, can play, and it's, you know, be interesting to see if some of them go down and play in Sea Island as they have in the past. I think it's just going to be one of those scattered things. It does seem like to me, I know it's an off season. It does seem like to me a long time just to put them down for 2 or 3 months. Because you do have guys that are on, you know, our guys have put their clubs down, and you got guys over in Europe. They're still playing throughout the year, and it's not as grueling. It's not every week, but, you know, it's a long time just to put them off for a couple of months. You should put them down some, and hopefully some of our guys who've had some momentum don't get too rusty.
Crazy question, but is there a hangover after the Ryder Cup for both teams because it's so mentally exhausting, you just want to get away from golf for a while? And how long before everybody kind of comes back together? I mean, it's so partisan that you've sensed the intensity and you know, the competition factor is so high. These guys are friends, but you sense for a while that, you know, after that tournament's over, they probably, both sides probably want to get away from golf and get away from each other, kind of get back out and become buddies again.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at this past week, most of the guys in the Ryder, they're from the Ryder Cup, the top two finishers at the Dunhill, Robert McIntyre and Tyrrell Hatton, both played and I guess rode the momentum wave. I mean, McIntyre finished with 366. It was really cold, but then from there, you really drop all the way down the list till you get to 21st before the next finisher, which was Fitzpatrick and Fleetwood. So, I think they probably all would like to have had a week off this week, given what they went through winning and losing. And we're still in this sort of hybrid period of getting these schedules right, of they're going to modify it again. And I've heard that 10 times. This is going to be modified again. They don't really like what they did this run around. So I would think you'll see more modifications going into next year. And then how this all comes back together. I mean, you know, they've got close, and then now they seem really far away, and some of that could be posturing and negotiation. And now you got a new PGA Tour commissioner coming in who seems to want to move the ball forward. Obviously, some of the guys that are out there on the LIV Tour probably don't really provide any value anymore back to the tour. You know, your Stinsons and your Poulters and your people like that, I mean, their careers are on the backside, Westwoods. But there still are some guys like Brooks Koepka, obviously Bryson DeChambeau and Cam Smith, and Dustin Johnson can still really play, and Tyrrell Hatton, and obviously John Rahm. I mean, you got some superstar guys that would just inject a lot back into the PGA Tour if you can get them all back together. And it's going to make the field stronger, the golf better. And by having the exemption process the way that they have right now, they've definitely kept that door open by exempting 100 players in, knowing you could really go all the way up to 150, 125 for sure, to where some of those guys can come back. And Liv's going to be in a weird place too. How do you go procure really talent now without just going and getting the top college players that you can get? I think you're probably stalemated on who else you're going to be able to get from the PGA Tour, given a lot of those guys took equity when the tour issued equity out. So I think they're probably – Liv's probably in a little bit of a worse place than they were, even though they do have the financial means to go really pay somebody crazy money. Because I talked to someone over the weekend, and they're like, still, if anyone was offered these crazy sums of money, they got to take it, because you're one swing away from an injury. How do you turn down $400 or $500 million? I just don't know if they're willing to pay that type of money anymore, because they've been losing money, and you know, they've gotten their foot in the door, and you know, they've had a lot more, you know, response to this year getting the Fox contract. But ultimately, golf really needs to be together. And I think if they could just be in the advertising arm or injection arm to really get a couple of you know, get some notoriety, I think they could probably blend them all back together, and then you'd have them as an investor and just owning a minority percentage.
Yeah, it could happen. I think, though, you said it well. I think the Libs lost a lot of their leverage, and I think now you get a taste of those guys playing Ryder Cup, and you can see how much they miss that type of competition with DeChambeau on the American team and the several Europeans. And I sense there's some guys over there at Liv that will start trying to work their way back to the PGA Tour. That's just my sense.
And it would work for the Champions Tour too, right? I mean, these guys that are, I just said we're a little phasing out, they're all about to be 50. I mean, get them, and they also have like lifetime status. So they should get to play the Champions Tour. It would help the Champions Tour.
Lastly, you play it where where it lies in golf, and Vince Whaley played from the pond yesterday. The problem is there's an alligator staring at him about 6 feet away. So a gutsy shot by one thing to take off the socks and roll up the pants legs and go hit a ball out of the water. It's another thing when you got an alligator staring at you, but no harm, no foul, I guess. And he got it out. He got it out and got it nearly to the green.
That'll tell you how much every shot matters to them out there. And, you know, there's a lot of money on the line. That was pretty dangerous. I watched it. I would have been a nervous wreck. But he also saw that he could get it out. I mean, when I saw the lie, I was like, man, he can get this out. But there's no way. I'm at least getting the alligator way much further away than he did. He that was a pretty ballsy move for sure. And one other thing, Gary, I don't know if you noticed, congrats to William Jennings. Became the first UA men's golfer to ever win his first two events in the first three starts. He won at the Colonial Intercollegiate at the Ben Hogan that TCU hosted. The team finished sixth, but he won and is off to an incredibly hot start. A buddy of mine that plays at his home club in Greenville, South Carolina, at the Chanticleer there, Greenville Country Club. He's been saying, you're going to see him on TV. He is raved about him, and this friend of mine can really play, and he's nailed it. I mean, he's won two or three and really strong field. So let's all keep an eye on William Jennings. And the women's team won last week, and they're kicking off today at the Illini Intercollegiate at Illinois.
Yeah, William Jennings, that's good golf. Yeah, we did something on the TV side, and I'm glad you mentioned him for sure. Great start to his Crimson Tide career. Hey, awesome segment, Casey. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Gary. Take care.
All right, 10:52, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back and wrap up this edition of the Gary Harris Show. We've got the week off and running. We'll be right back.
Coming up on The Game with Ryan Fowler.
Coming up on the Monday edition of The Game, we're going to feature Coach Tommy Tuberville. We'll talk to Drew DeArmond. We'll also talk with Martin Houston. We'll do the good, the bad, and the ugly as we recap Alabama and Vanderbilt every Monday, sponsored by DanielMoreArt.com, starting at 2 p.m. on The Game with Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest-running sports program in
The Tide Tailgate Show is presented by Pearl River Resort,
DCH Regional Medical Center,
Two Dimes Tuscaloosa,
and Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky partially sunny today. The chance of a few isolated showers this afternoon or this evening. The high today, 84. Tonight's low, 69. Tomorrow, a mixture of clouds and sunshine with a chance of scattered showers. The high, 87. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 79 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Need to know what's going on with the Crimson Tide? Then subscribe to our YouTube channel for exclusive content on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Between the sheets.
All right, 10:55. We're going to close out the show with Bryce. Hey, Bryce, good morning.
Hey, Gary, a great win. My score was close, but I missed. Yeah.
Remind me what you picked it.
34-17.
Yeah, you weren't far off at all. Good call.
Hey, I told one of my associates, don't take Florida in the point. I just had a feeling that they were going to mess them up.
Well, they did. Their defense really gave Arch Manning fits. And Texas right now has got a lot of questions around surrounding that football team.
You know, yeah, and what Steve Spurrier said, you know, beginning of the season makes a lot of sense. If he was that good, why were they playing Quint Ewers?
Well, you know, Quint Ewers is pretty good too. And I bet you right now there's a lot of Texas fans that wish they had him back. But well, I still think Arch has got a chance to be a good quarterback. I do. I think I'm part of that. I saw the name Manning and I looked at what, you know, Peyton and Eli had done and Archie had done and how he had been brought up in the game and saw what he did last year when he got a chance to play. And I thought he was going to be, you know, a legit top, you know, one of the top quarterbacks in the country. And it just has not happened. And now they're scrambling a little bit.
Well, I wouldn't trade our quarterback in by any league.
Well, I'm not sure I would either. I think Ty Simpson's playing great right now. And I'm excited to see him play at Missouri on the road. And I'm with you. I think he's playing really good football. He keeps playing like this, and the defense can continue to take the steps that they've taken the last couple of weeks. This team's going to be hard to beat now. They will be hard to beat.
I agree with you. But one other thing, Ty.
Yeah, go ahead.
He said he hit the ball too wrong. I like when a quarterback admits when he makes mistakes.
No doubt about it.
He probably blamed than he should have.
Hey, thank you, Bryce. Great call, man. Way to close out the show. What a show today. Plenty of good phone calls. Hey, listen, I really did want to get to the Kalen DeBoer audio, but we didn't have a chance. And I'm not going to run Coach's audio from Saturday at the expense of my caller. So we appreciate all the great phone calls today. Great way to get the show started for the week. Thanks to Rodney Orr. Thanks to Casey Smith. Thanks to Chase there in the studio. And thanks to all of you for tuning in to the Gary Harris Show. Back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. The Inside the Trenches podcast tonight with Wallace Gilberry and Andre Smith at 7 o'clock on Tide 100.9 FM and Tide 109.com. The Miller's Edge is coming up next. Have a great day, everybody.